Peter Tosh with background vocals supplied by Bunny Wheeler. This is the title track from Tosh's 1977 album, also titled, of course, Equal Rights. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and a couple of notes I want to make as we start the program today. We had quite a bit of a response to yesterday's program, and people were calling in to express their opinion, as is the case usually here, and we couldn't accommodate them all. So we'll take some time today and open up the phone lines again and invite those who weren't able to get in yesterday to get in today, and then we proceed with the rest of the program as I've scheduled. So in advance, I want to thank you for your grace and your generosity in leaving some space as we start the program today for those who were not able to get their calls in and heard yesterday. They got the calls in, but we just could not proceed with the calls to have them set up to talk about the subject from their particular perspective. So 888-874-4888 is a number to call. Let's not waste any time. If you weren't able to talk about your perspective yesterday, this would be a good time to make up for that. What did we talk about yesterday? We talked about the obvious attempt by the President of the United States to rebrand himself, because apparently he has gotten word, and he believes it, that he is troubling the minds of the Republican Party, and even voters who might be contemplating voting for him again. So he has in recent weeks taken on this this revamping, this rebranding himself. The question is, from what to what? Or from what to what else is he possibly rebranding himself to be? The reason this is an important question to ask and to answer is that, one, it is very, very timely, and two, it will be a central question to what is coming down the pike. What is Trump trying to do? What is this rebranding about? What is the message, or what are the messages that he is sending as he, quote, rebrands, unquote? What are we to make of all of this? So in your response, I'd like you to get to that part as quickly as you can. What is he attempting to change? Is it working? Is the rebranding working? I'm not going to answer that. I'll wait to hear what your response is. And what message is he sending? Why does it appear that he's having difficulty even now within his own party? And with people who are high profile people within the party, he's having some difficulty. What do you think is going on? And once you could help us focus on that, that helps us to take this discussion to the next level, because there are many changes occurring, some of them at the same time, but we can't ignore the fact that there is a change, a dramatic change occurring in this country at the moment, and it is meant to send several messages. What, in your view, are these messages? And is Trump being successful in sharing his messages with his constituency? G from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello?
Hey, how are
Yes,
you,
you're.
Patrice?
How you doing? You're on the air.
I am. Thank you very much. Okay, you know something? I just actually picked up the phone because my wife said you was on, and you were saying that you was also following up from yesterday. I heard the last part of you, so I don't know whether you know, want to talk about a new topic, but I just want to make sure I'm on the program, you know, the
No,
right
you're on the
way.
program. I just wanted to give people who didn't get in yesterday to fully express their opinion and relate to the question. And then we have other things also we want to talk about. So, what do you have to say?
Okay. What I have to say is because I think the question was why did we allow Trump to be president of the United States, knowing all the baggage that we knew? And I think it's sort of, I think because what happened was that when we voted for Obama, and I have a, you know, and I actually feel that he was selected, but that's a different subject for now. But when Obama was elected president of the United States, okay, he came on with hope and change, and he was a new person, fresh, young ideas, a beautiful young wife, a beautiful children, a community organizer. So most people sort of felt that he actually represented the average person. Okay, the average person. It was time for a change in America. So everybody was so excited, right? And everybody followed him, okay? And then when Obama became president of the United States, okay, and also you had millions of white people. Okay, that also said, hey, we're going to give him a chance. After Bush, they said, we're going to give him a chance, and after Clinton and everything else, right? And what happened was that I think that Obama sort of betrayed the average working class person. Okay, and so everybody was like, wow, politics is usual, you know, politics as usual. And then when he ran for the second term, they thought, okay, now he doesn't have to have the restraint. Now he can really do what he promised, and he betrayed us. And here comes Trump. Trump was, you know, when he ran against Hillary, and everyone knew that Hillary, you know, they also betrayed us with Libya and all the rest of the stuff and Benghazi. So now Trump comes along, make America great again. And then people actually thought that since Trump didn't have no experience, as he wasn't an experienced politician, that, and everybody thought that he, you know, oh, Trump, no, he's a billionaire. He can't be bought. I mean, a lot of so many millions of people fell for the Kool-Aid that he can't be bought when we don't really understand that business. You have to be bought in order to achieve what he did. And then he was giving us the red herrings with the racism and the Mexicans and stuff. So that stirred up the racial divide in this nation. And then when you look at everything else that's going along, racism in America said we finally got our man. And so, you know, because he just represents the establishment, he represents the international bankers, and people didn't come out and support Hillary. And then, of course, the last minute they brought, you know, those letters that, you know, the her files and everything. So people just, it was like a perfect storm because make America great again. And then he actually was telling black people and people of color, what do you have to lose? And
Yes, but
so in
what
our
is he
mind.
selling now? What is he selling now as he approaches the reboot?
Well, what he's selling now is just more hatred, okay? And now those people that love him, right, are the racists in America that's looking at the statistics that say in 20 and 30 and 40 years from now, guess what? These people of color are going to take over America. So what he's selling the racism and the fear of the black nation, fear of a black man, fear of a browning of America. And this is what he's selling. So those that love him use the Bible, okay, as a separation tool, because these evangelists in church, when they go, they say, oh, God says everyone, you know, sits under their own fig tree. And that's a red herring for racism. In other words, we have to divide this nation, and people are falling for the Kool-Aid. And that's what
but
I think.
You say they're falling for the Kool-Aid. What gives you that indication?
Because you have so many Christian fundamentalists, right, that are making so much excuses. Even when he went to the church and he cleared up the people with the tear gas in Washington, and people are saying, well, you know, he's a Christian. He has every right to go into the house of worship. I mean, everything he does, right, they just make so much and so many excuses for him. It's like they just lost their soul. I can see maybe
I didn't get the feeling at all that they were making excuses for Trump pretty much invading the church and entering in the unmannerly and disrespectful way that he did yesterday. They took him to task publicly about that.
Oh, no. They did the bishop of the church, and also, but the Republicans and the fundamentalists, right? Those Christians fundamentalists, you know, I guess no matter what he does, they're going to support him, you know? So, you know, I just really think that they opened the door. Obama opened the door by having a betrayal of all the principles that he said change. And everybody, you know, so that was like, you know something, here we voted for this young black man. We thought he was going to make a difference. And he gave us the same thing all the rest of them did. And they just, you know, Trump is, remember, he's an actor.
But you don't see that Obama did contribute something? You disagree the fact that he did contribute something?
That Obama contributes? No, I think he contributed towards getting Trump elected. Okay? I mean, he gave us a face of, you know, his English, and he's good, but he never stood for the working class person. Okay? He stood with more spying on America, more the list of assassination. He gave us, you know, NAFTA 2.0. So he just talked good. Okay? He gave us a good speech. But at the end of the day, no jobs in the hood, no jobs for working class white people, black, brown, okay? So he just represent more of the damn same thing. So people were tired of that. So Trump came along in perfect timing, make America great again. And then so many people, you know, with Hillary would represent the same thing. So they just fell for the Kool-Aid.
All right. Well, thank you. You got us started today. Yeah, you put a lot on the table to consider. Thanks so much. Phil from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Yatrice, and to the PRN audience.
Listen. Good afternoon.
You're welcome.
You too.
Thank you. I was listening yesterday to the program and the listeners' remarks. And yes, in terms of the revamping or the attempted revamping of Trump, I mean he's really trying to sort of fit the script in a sense, in that he's sort of doubling down on, you know, his rhetoric, but at the same time he's turned a new page that's even more authoritarian and right wing, which he believes is going to appeal to his base and fire up even some of the white nationalists who are being very violent.
You get the feeling though that he's not so much concerned about his base because he has proof that they're tight with him. He and his base are tight. And what he might be in search of is new blood coming in, people
yes.
who would never have considered an affiliation with him, but will now consider supporting Trump if he becomes basically our newest dictator.
Yes, absolutely. You're right. He is looking for that new blood, you know, the Dylan Roots of the world out there who are, you know, millennials and even younger. And there's fertile ground there. But at the same time, there is a what I'll call a pushback. I was going to say resistance. It's not that strong. It's a pushback movement, so to speak, by stalwart traditional Republicans. And I saw yesterday that of all people, well, George Will was never a true fan of Trump ever, but he's coming out very publicly. And George Will, for those who don't know him, is a long-term, very conservative Republican commentator for the Washington Post and other media, and a supporter of Nixon and Bush, both Bushes and so forth, and really someone that has always been very much on the conservative side. And so you see more and more of the old school Republicans, you know, coming forward, and George Will, you know, stressed, you know, that the greatest thing that could happen is for Trump to lose. Now, that's coming from, you know, a rock solid, dyed in the wool, you know, blue blood Republican. And so I think there's a new sort of movement in that direction that, you know, is going to counter what Trump is doing, because he's becoming, as they see, even more erratic and more dangerous each and every day. And so that's kind of, I think, where things are going. So he's making his attempt to revamp himself, but you know, he's just really digging in.
He's digging in, but he's got a plan. What is the plan, you think?
I think the plan is I think the protests that are going on now are falling into his plan to sort of cast again people of color and some of the some of our associates who are in like mine as really being counter to what this country is about or what it should be, and it's more and more of a us, meaning a white us, against them, meaning a dark them. And so he's really digging in that regard to cast us in a really dynamic racial confrontation that we've never
Isn't
seen
before. Isn't that, in fact, contrary to what true conservatives are against? They're not for race wars. They're not, at least they espouse it, that they're not for division and, you know, internecine warfare. So
exactly,
what would make them suddenly pay attention to Trump and join his cabal?
Well, I think when, you know, they look at their own interests in terms of people who look like them, and they look at the children, the preservation of their, you know, I don't want to say their bloodline, but of their survival, in a sense, as a dominant culture, that is what is at stake. You know, the numbers say that in a few years, you know, this will be a nation of so-called minorities, I say people of color. We're already there, I believe. And they know that, meaning the powers that be, you know, in government and finance, better than anybody else. And so we're already there. And so that's why there's this huge, you know, it's a new revolution that is coming from the right to draw the line hard and to, you know, at all costs, and even if that means extreme violence, as we've seen, or the threat of violence, as Trump has indicated very clearly.
Well, that's very insightful stuff that you just shared with us. And thank you. Thank you for calling in and contributing that. David from Brooklyn. Brooklyn is winning today.
Yes. Today. I didn't get in yesterday, so I'm trying today. You know, as I thought about the discussion yesterday, what was coming to my mind was Trump as I thought about him yesterday, he is wickedly brilliant. He is wickedly brilliant. To be able to do what he's accomplished and get himself to the highest office in the country. I mean, you can't be a dummy like, you know, some people think he's dumb and they have all kind of pejorative things to say about him. And I agree with some of them. But someone that can do what he has done, you know, you couldn't be a real dummy to do that. So that's what I want to say. Also, I think that he is using the tools that are the tools that control this whole country of the United States of America very well. And the major tool that everybody ought to think about is the divide and rule strategy. That's how you rule. You divide people up. And, you know, some people are talking about, well, there are going to be more people of color in a couple of years or so. And so, you know, it doesn't make any difference. You can divide people up and you can still rule. And if you think about South Africa, when they had mostly African phenotype people from the southern part of Africa and a handful of European phenotypes, they ran everything. So it's not just a matter of how many people of a particular phenotype you have. You have to be able to mix these people up and have them their attention given to things that you want them to be thinking about, like with Trump, it's the wall and immigrants and black folks and riots. You just get the attention away from the things that you want to do, which is to enrich the class of oligarchs who run the country at the expense of everybody else. And if you think about it, whether you deal with the Democrat part of the Uniparty or the Republican, their mission or their goal is the same, to enrich those at the top and the heck with the rest of the people, except for the professional class that has some keeping power. So, you know, that's what I was thinking all the while. So, you know, he's just a master at manipulating the underclass of European phenotype people, and you know, and now he's even recruiting, as I see, some African phenotype people, and you know, he's gonna live some of those in, some of the people that are on that side. So you know, I wouldn't call him an idiot or anything like that. Some people do, I know. But I say he is wickedly brilliant.
Do you sense in the response that he has gotten, especially in the aftermath of the killing of, stalling on the name and I shouldn't, George Floyd?
Oh, yes.
Do you sense that there is the beginning of resistance there that could challenge Trump and his plans?
Well, yes, I think that is possible for that to happen. However, when you look at the masses of his base and whatnot, they do not care about Mr. Floyd and other people like that. And what is good about this is that it has brought to the attention of most people that that type of behavior has been demonstrated by the police over a long time, and I understand thousands of people have been killed by police. And when you divide people up and you make people enemies of each other, you know, they don't seem to be concerned with that type of behavior, even though there has, I think, been some change, because usually these things happen and we don't get the type of response that we've gotten the last couple of days. So he's going to come up with some kind of strategy to deal with that. And, you know, it may work and or it may not. But as a wicked, brilliant man, he will come up with something. With if he can't think of it himself, he'll have some people that will back him up, and they will come up with some strategy to derail this whole awakening that people are having, to the extent where they are going to get to a rebellion.
Thank you, David, for calling in and, as always, contributing so meaningfully to the subject at hand. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Utrecht?
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm all right, but I'm a little, you know, when I hear David and I hear other callers, this man is not brilliant. This man is no genius. He's playing a Nixon strategy. Everybody forgets, with the Electoral College, the election is a numbers game. The Electoral College, which was the great defeat of this country by Andrew Jackson to appease the South, gives the South superior numbers. And the Electoral College should be banned. It should be gone. We should do ranked choice voting. We should abolish the Electoral College, because it was part of the great Southern Compromise. And that's what he's claiming. They're a hardcore bunch of rednecks, for want of a better word, that will vote in fear of a black planet. And that's what he's using, raising the Bible, going to churches, trying to appear some type of religious moral character. He's using a Nixon strategy. And he's not anywhere near as smart as Nixon. But this man is no genius. This is the only bright light I see at the tunnel is that there are a lot more people involved in this movement than you think, due to the fact of the COVID-19 virus, due to the fact that people were stuck at home and had more of an opportunity to pay attention to what was going on and decided to get involved. All of these are playing a factor in this paradigm shift that we're going through. But this man is no genius, believe me. He's playing an old horse strategy that, from my opinion, probably won't work. And we might have to settle with a compromise with Biden just to get a socialist and an egomaniac and a crazy man out of office. But, you know, there's no brilliance in this. There's no great chess move in this. He's playing an idiot game because he's an idiot.
I don't mean to laugh, but the way you said it.
I mean, it's clear.
Do you see that because of his articulation recently, you know, this idea that he's changing, he's shifting, he's looking at things differently, do you think this would cause people to reevaluate their opinion of Trump?
He's not, there's no radical change. Like I said, if you're politically astute and if you pay attention to history, he's playing the Southern strategy. Nixon did it. He's trying to play that, you know, the black enemy and being against the police, and I'm a religious man and I'm law and order, and these governors are weak. And he's doing the same thing. If you look back and forth, that's how Nixon got elected, playing that Southern strategy, because he's playing a numbers game. If he can appeal to the key flip states because of this Electoral College, he'll get the numbers and he'll win. The politics in this country is not, it is basically a popularity contest and a numbers game. And with it, until we get rid of the Electoral College, until we change the fundamental way that the electoral process is conducted in this country, we're always going to have people that find this mathematical solution to appeal to a fringe group of voters and to get them to come out, to give them the numbers to win. You know, I mean,
do you see among black voters, based on the recent kind of activity that we have seen, do you see this burgeoning into something that could change the political equation this time around?
Well, it already has. I mean, black people are going to vote against Trump. I mean, it's not something that I find appealing, but that's the best of the worst strategy we have. They're going to come out in mass and vote against Trump because of what he's done and because of the way he's trying to use this shift. And the only thing that he is banking on, in my opinion, is that he can get enough of the swing state voters, those rednecks that live up in the Okefenokees, to come out and vote for him like they did the last time. But the problem is he's fomenting hate. He's fomenting division, and a lot of people are beginning to see that. And people don't want, and a large amount of people in this country don't want that. And that's what I think is going to be his downfall.
Well, you make a solid point. Let's see where it goes next. Thanks for calling in, Ed, and contributing today. Gwen from New York, we missed you yesterday.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, Eutrice. First, I wanted to say, you were talking yesterday about what was Trump changing and why was he changing. I was a little fuzzy on the subject. There's two things I want to talk about very quickly. But after you talked about that yesterday, I got the exact picture of Adolf Hitler holding the Bible with exactly the same hand, exactly the same side of his body. It was the strangest thing. If you could interchange those two photographs, exactly identical, the same. And I don't know why Trump felt the need to run across the street, get rid of all those protesters, and do that. But it was bizarre after you brought the show up talking about the religious stuff. And then this picture of Hitler comes up, which just sent chills down my spine, because I know that he is itching to be the next dictator, just like Hitler. I know that's what he wants. And that is why I think that my suggestion to the protesters, and I will be down with the protesters soon, is that one of the things we need to throw in the bag right now is we have to, our government, all of our government elected officials will not try to impeach him again. They've all resigned to him being where he is. But I'm telling you, I really don't think we have till November the 2nd to wait. He's going to use these protests as a cover to shut down the government and say that he's going to cancel the elections due to the unrest in the United States. That's one thing I wanted to tell you. And something happened to me last week that I just wanted to tell people that was very scary. I didn't realize that, I got on my social media a request from somebody named Mark Milley to follow me. This is on Instagram. That's what they do. Instead of friend requests, they call it following. I didn't know who Mark Milley was. And then I looked, and it said he was one of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And then I looked him up, and I thought, this is crazy. Why would somebody like Mark Milley want to talk to me? I mean, you know, I really couldn't get it. And I started to kind of make jokes about it to my friend, you know, who doesn't do any social media and doesn't know anything about social media. And I said, well, what do you think I should do? And he said, well, why don't you follow him back? So I called a friend of mine today who is Lynn Stewart's husband, and they have always been followed by the FBI. And he told me that the minute you went and followed him back, you just gave him all of your contacts and all of your contacts' contacts, and I feel terrible about it. And I had no idea at all. I don't know why I wasn't thinking like that. I was thinking guarded, but clearly not guarded enough. And I know as an activist, you always have an X on your back, but I really think that we're at a different place. We're at an emergency. And, you know, at the beginning of all this, you know, I think it's the catapult, of course, is George bringing us into the streets. But the things that I wanted to remind people of is that, you know, I keep hearing about this looting on TV, and I want to remind people that we've been looted at least for the last 30 years in the most violent ways. While our schools have been torn down and turned into shopping centers, while we have been all evicted from where we live to make way for high-rise condominiums, 80,000 people in New York City are homeless due to a corrupt landlord-tenant court. These are acts of looting against us. Even my own father lost $80,000 in the year 2008 because when they sold their house, they put their money in the stock market. And so I think that to me, to see a store go down, not a good thing, but here's the thing, the store was going to go down anyway because they weren't going to get any money from this administration to reopen their stores with this collapsed economy. And at least they're going to get the insurance from the fires now. At least they will have something. There was a silver lining to having these stores looted. And I don't really care about the big stores. I mean, if you told me Citibank is going down, and I don't really care, Eutrice, because places like Citibank and Jamie Dimon, these are the people that have stripped us in the United States. They have looted us. They have raped us. And so I want to tell you that the focus of people should not be on this crap that the news is putting out. Yes, there's been a little bit of looting, but nothing next to the trillions of dollars that have been pulled out of our pockets, our homes, which we have lost to places like BlackRock, who has turned people, homeowners all over America, into homeless people while they rent their family houses out. So think carefully about that. Right now, we need to keep our mind focused on impeaching him now, not tomorrow. I don't care if the Senate or the Congress want to do it. They have to do it before November 2nd, because in my opinion, he is definitely going to use these protests, which will continue out, as an excuse to cancel the election. And I really want to stress the urgency there.
Well, he can't cancel the election. He doesn't have
but
the power,
he is a dictator.
Even as president,
he is a dictator.
Yes, but even so, only Congress could do that.
Do you know how Hitler consolidated power? The Reichstag was set on fire, and then he came in legally. He came into a democratic country with a constitution, and then after the Reichstag was set on fire, he said, that's it. We're going into lockdown, similar to where we are right now, and these are the new rules of the road. And you know what? Nobody fought him. And he was able to become the ultimate dictator in this world. And so I wouldn't put anything past this administration or Trump.
Okay. Thank you, Gwen. I'm glad that we got to you today.
And love you too, Dream.
Even though we lost you yesterday, we'll be back. Thank you for calling in and for your patience. Thank you. E from Edgewater. How are you doing?
Hello, Eutrice. I'm doing all right. Thanks very much for asking. Hope you and everybody else is doing good.
Well, we're all trying. We're all trying to hang in here. What are your thoughts about this move that Donald Trump is in the midst of, which is changing his persona and trying to reach out to perhaps several other constituencies?
I think it's just an illusion. They have us believing in illusions now, and we've been living under a dictatorship since John Kennedy was murdered, but we just didn't realize it because they placated us, because they needed us to build things and make this world a better place for the rich. And it's not 1% and we're 99%. It's more like they have 1 billion people supporting their corrupt system against 6.5 billion people. And the most of those 6.5 billion are third world people that don't really realize what's going on in life, what's going to happen. So, it's a much bigger thing that we're up against here. It's a lot of people are supporting the system because they feel it protects them from all us bad people here that are really the good people. It's all an illusion. It's crazy. And, you know, we're victims. We're being misled, lied to a million times, and we just keep believing in their stories, and I don't understand why. I don't know why we're so easily tricked and persuaded to go this way and that way. And it's mesmerizing to me that it's so easy for them to trick us. And yeah, that's the way I'm seeing it, Eutrice.
I'm listening to you.
I don't know what else.
Let me get a little personal with you. So with this scenario in your head, what are you inclined to do next, if anything?
Yeah, me and a few of my close friends, we're all really I can't put it into words. We really don't have any plans because the way they have things set up. I mean, what can you really do? The only thing a friend of mine says is when they come to give you the vaccine, don't take it. But then, you know, if you don't take the vaccine, then you're going to be, you know, an outlaw. You know, if you don't go along with the official truth that Channel 2, 4, and 7 are spinning out there for us, then you're some kind of an upstart. You're an anti-American. You're against the world. You need to be thrown out. You need to be castigated. You can't have another opinion unless you're going along with what they say is what it is. And everybody seems to be happy about going along with it. Wear a mask? Oh, sure, I'll wear a mask. Do this?
I would disagree on the basis that we've seen in the last week a lot of resistance. So not everybody's going along at all.
I'm not seeing resistance. I'm seeing people being tricked into doing things. They're forcing. See, the country was about to go into a big depression. According to people, financial people like Gerald Salantri and Jack Rasmus, that we were headed for a big depression, like the Great Depression in the 30s and 40s. So in order to avoid that and to get other things accomplished, they make this virus happen. So everything's got to shut down, and then they all can be blamed on the virus. And now the virus don't seem to be so important because everybody's out in the streets over this, what happened to this man, Floyd. Now, when Freddie Gray and Eric Garner, and then culminating with Sandra Blaine, I didn't see people coming out and doing this because Obama was the president at the time, and they didn't want to make problems more for Obama. But for Trump, this is fine. You know, everything is going against him, and it's all set up. You think people are really doing what they want to do? They're doing what they think they're supposed to do. This is the reaction that they're having. We're reacting. We're not thinking. And like David from Brooklyn says, this is a brilliant plan that they have come up with. And me and a few of my close friends, we're really puzzled by what our next step should be. And
at least you're direct and honest about that. A lot of people, myself included, I have no idea what is going to happen next, because Trump has developed with us a reputation for himself not knowing what he's going to do next. So it's a matter of us waiting to see what signals he's sending. But in the meantime, I think we could cull enough information from the 3.5 years he's been in office to kind of predict to a certain degree where he might go. Thanks, E, for calling in today. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Is it Ari from New York?
Hi. Yes, you three. How are you doing? I'm sorry. Yeah, this is Ali.
Ali.
I just wanted to say hello to you and all the listeners.
Ali. Okay,
yes.
Good.
Yeah.
How are you?
Oh, how are you doing? I just wanted to say a few things. First of all, people keep saying, I didn't vote for her. I would never will. But people keep saying that Hillary was not supported, that more people came and voted for Hillary than they voted for Trump. People, you just have to get that into their head. And I know that, I think your first caller, that's what he said. It's not true. It's just not true. It's the way that the system works here. But I just wanted to say this. I remember, and I'm going to attach this to your question about Trump and what he did right in D.C. and coming out with the Bible. One of the things that I would have to say is in 2011, I went to Zuccotti Park for New Year's Eve. And I do remember, and I actually I do have it on some of my video. They were, you know, we went to the park to wait for the year, and you know what happened? The destruction by the police department, and how they were pepper spraying people. So every time that I see what is going on right now in all these cities, that you see the military. Last night, if you took a look at what was happening in Atlanta with the military, it's scary, you know, how they're standing there. And I could imagine that's what they're going to be doing to us. Why? Because the chickens, they're coming home to roost. So people, I remember this woman telling me at Zuccotti on Christmas Eve, oh, look what the cops are doing. Like she was so surprised what the cops were doing to all these people at Zuccotti. And I turned around and I said to her, it was a Caucasian woman, I said, you know, this is what the United States government have been doing all along to people outside this country. So I don't know what is going to happen. That's what you were saying, and I don't know what is going to happen. But between voter suppression, and between, if this guy is only approved by 40% or less, which I think is less than 40%, and people that come out and vote for you know, the less of the two evil, which I don't even think that he's less of the two evil, because all those over 2 million people they are in jail is part of his legacy. And I'm talking about that Biden, that guy who I don't know. But anyway, I just wanted to say that it is a plan. He is a plan, and I won't be surprised if he wins again. This man was standing on that church, and he knew what happened to the people that were out there. We have to tie our seatbelt. It's like when you are on a plane, and the plane's probably going to go down, and they tell you to tie your seatbelt. Yes, because I just don't see this to end up in a good place. But I will say this, and this is something that I said from the beginning, maybe eventually he will make his own hole where we could keep him down and then throw all the dirt on top of him and keep him down. But you know what? We have to get rid of the whole government in order to for us to get out of this thing, because they're talking about looters. Yeah, the little criminal looters that they're going around. And you know what? The big looters, those are the ones that we have to get rid of. If we don't get rid of those big looters, and you're talking about Walmart, Amazon, Citibank, Chase, all these people, I mean, you could go on and on and on. There is no way, even if we get rid of him, that we're going to survive what is happening. And I do agree.
This plan is going to work.
His plan, well, you know, that picture, we know that he took that picture for the people that they are supporting him. Have you noticed that the people that support, they're very, very quiet, that you don't even see them? You don't see them because a lot of them, they have been provocateurs. And I know for a fact they are. Yes, we have to give a lot of credit to the people that are there sacrificing themselves. For a lot of us. But if you notice, they were coming out with their guns and everything to support him, but now they're really, really, it's like he sent his body language and what he did is like a message that he sent it to that group. And remember, those are the same people that they said that the birther of the world.
Those are the same people that say, we want our country back. You see, they use we want our country back. And then when he got into power, he used a mega saying. MAGA. So if you take a look and you combine all those things together, he sent them a message. That was, I don't know what kind of message he sent to them, but that was a message. There is something about his face, his posture, and everything that he's sending a message to them. Because one thing that I noticed, they're very, very quiet.
Well, he hasn't ordered them into battle yet. That's coming up next.
Okay.
He ordered the police into battle to wage war, essentially, against private citizens. So I imagine at some point he'll up the ante and say things that would get people to push the envelope even farther toward the direction of internal warfare. We're not far away from that. Not at all. Thanks, Ali, for calling in today. Good to hear from you. I really appreciate your call. Harvey, I see that you're calling in. Not much time to talk, though, because we're at the end of the program. Do you want to proceed or you want to wait another day?
Hello?
Yes, I'm talking. Did you hear me? Well, that answers the question. Okay. So we've accomplished a great mission today, and that is to accommodate those people who really wanted to talk yesterday, but we had an overload and we just couldn't handle the traffic. I don't believe in cutting people short, and I don't believe in denying people an opportunity to say what they have to say. And so I am deliriously happy today that we got this piece of business taken care of. And we will pick up again from where we're leaving off today tomorrow. Of course, we'll return to contemporary issues, having, I think, explored what people are thinking about Trump's new plan to revamp, to remake himself. Sure. So let's see where we can go and with our subjects tomorrow. And I am very, very, I tell you this all the time. I'm not embarrassed to say it or not shy about it. I feel very, very proud and very special to be in your midst, helping, at least I hope I'm helping to keep things going, and to help you present your views. That's my job, to help you articulate your own points of view and to make space for that. And that makes me proud of PRN, because we're not thinking that this is a 5-minute discussion and then we move on to something else. We want to allow you the space and the time it takes for you to express yourselves. And we learn a lot in the process. So I want to thank you for honoring this program and me that way, and the station that way. So sit tight. We'll come back to each other tomorrow and talk about something else. All right. Bye-bye. But none of them.